Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. Gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. Gonna be bright, sunshiny day.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments that you would like to call in during this broadcast or send in, you can email me directly at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. So as most of you know by now, a couple of weeks ago, we had our annual healing weekend, which really hadn't been annual for 2 years because of the COVID. But we were back in the saddle again here in Philadelphia with wonderful women who just enlightened me. I'm still floating on that cloud. Wonderful who got together to share their experiences. And on the second day of the healing weekend, we have different speakers come in to try to help our women along. And one of my speakers and my good friend for many years, Ira Gelman, he did us the honor of joining us for that day. So I asked him if he would do us the honor of joining us for tonight. And here he is. Hi, Ira.
Hey, Bonnie. Glad to be here.
Ira, what do you think about the healing weekend for the part that you were a part of?
Yeah, it was really powerful. It was, a chance for, I think, you know, whenever someone's dealing in a situation where they were betrayed by their husband, you know, there's a lot of shame and guilt and secrecy around it. And when these ladies weren't in front of each other, they were all going through the same thing. So even though obviously it couldn't change their situations, it changed their outlook and their ability to manage it because they were able to talk openly without feeling like anybody was judging them. And that's a tremendous part of any kind, even though this wasn't a therapy session per se, but that's like, you know, the basis to like all therapy is to help somebody, you know, manage something But when they feel like they're being judged or isolated, it magnifies it tremendously. So I thought that hearing their women, you know, the women speak and seeing them, it was powerful and learning experience for me as well.
Oh, I'm so glad it was. I mean, like you said, it was really therapeutic when you can get together with a group of women who have experienced what you have. And it's so interesting because if you would listen to 17 stories in the room, there'd be 17 different stories and they would all sound the same. Maybe there'd be in a different location, a different place, a different space, but the emotional impact on women is definitely the same. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, yeah. And the interesting thing is it doesn't make a difference what religion, what race you are. Pain is pain. And, you know, there was a mixed group and, you know, everybody, I think, was there to try to help each other and sharing, you know, what they were, you know, willing to share to help them, you know, as I said a few minutes ago, like manage the issue that they were in.
So let me ask you a couple questions just to get your opinion as the conversation goes. Do you think that women who are in the situation, for the most part, do they come from some kind of dysfunction to be able to maintain themselves in this kind of relationship for so long?
Boy, you're starting off with a heavy-hitting question right away. You're not kidding. to some degree. To some degree. And that's a non-judgmental statement that I am making. I think many times men who are looking, especially men who are looking for a cover, on one hand, it's a compliment that they selected you, ladies, because they're looking for somebody who, you know, is going to give them a respectable presentation to make to the public, which is what they desperately want to have. So on one hand, you should feel complimented that, you know, they felt that you could be that, you know, respectable presentation. But they also tend to pick or find women that they feel are going to, I don't know if stick by them is the right word, but that they can get away for a long time their lifestyle that they're trying to keep secret from you. So someone who they feel might be a little insecure or embarrassed, you know, take somebody, you know, who was divorced once before. The last thing they're going to want is to have a second marriage that also is going to end in a divorce. So,
you know, that's so interesting that you said that, because a number of women have said to me that they're hanging into this marriage because of the fact, not that they're happy or not that it's content, you know, they're content, but because they've already had one bad marriage, and how's it going to look if they have a second one?
Yeah, no, that's and that's understandable. You know, it's, you know, a lot of people who get divorced once end up getting divorced the second time. And it's not a matter of bad luck. It's a matter of, you know, we tend to put up with relationships, whether we seek them consciously or not, that meet some need of ours. So if somebody is in a relationship, if a woman's in a relationship with a guy that is totally misrepresenting himself, I mean, could it be bad luck? It could be. But could it also be that he was providing some type of cover for her, which could be, you know, having, you know, a lot of gay men are into looking really good. So is he somebody that made you look good in some way? But there must be some behavior or some need that he was fulfilling for that relationship to work for as long as it did.
Well, not necessarily, because in many of these relationships, they really haven't lasted for a long time because they're good relationships. But just because we've been deceived in these relationships and don't really know what the truth is.
Oh, I agree. You know, it's nothing to do with the relationship being good. It's that these guys, you know, I mentioned at the Healing Weekend that a lot of the men tend to fall in three main categories. You have one category of men that is gay, has no intention of changing, and specifically, especially going back, you know, 10, 20 years or more ago, is looking for someone to be his cover. whether it's for his family, it's for his career. He consciously mm-hmm. was seeking a woman to be his cover. Then you have a second category of guys that knew they had attractions to men, but they probably didn't act on it, or if they did, it was like a one- or two-time thing, and they just figure this is something that, you know, all guys did, and if I get married to a woman, especially if I have a kid or two, you know, any homosexual feelings I have are going to be gone. And then you have mm-hmm. a third group of guys that, because of maybe religious reasons or self-hatred, under no circumstance want to live a life as a gay man or admit that they're gay, and they probably will die saying that they're not gay. So they are entering into a relationship similar to the second category, but they will never admit that they were gay. And in many cases, they become very abusive in order to blame the woman for, you know, the lack of intimacy, whether it's emotional or physical, you know, that's going on there.
Mm-hmm. So is there any hope for broken relationships like this or not?
All right. Now, here's where things get, you know, a little touchy. When someone's in therapy, the therapist has to be very careful to not impose their belief system onto a client. So if someone was going to say to me, if a woman was going to say that she is willing to accept this relationship, if she's saying it, you know, without any threats of force against her, then that has to be respected. So as much as I would not care for that, I believe you wouldn't care for that. If someone is willing to put up with a husband that has a double life, that's up to them.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, you know, we've spoken before about sexual orientation, especially for men. If a man is gay, he's gay. And to expect him to not act out on his sexual impulses is really not realistic, because sex is a very powerful driving force, and you can't help who you meet or who you run into. And if somebody is going to deny who they are, it's going to come out sooner or later. So I would say in most cases, a tough decision has to get made. And about, can I stay in this relationship accepting? Even if the man promises and swears on a stack of Bibles that he's going to change, your orientation is your orientation.
Mm-hmm.
So then there's a tough decision now, because the guy, let's say he's a good guy, that makes things more difficult, and the woman would have to make a decision on what she is willing to sacrifice.
Yes, and I guess there are women who do live like that.
Yeah. You know, there are people in regular, you know, in fully heterosexual marriages where one of them, you know, used to be the guy, leaves on Sunday night, Monday morning, and worked, you know, away and didn't come home until maybe Friday night. And they spent years and years in a relationship. And assuming they're both being monogamous with each other, I wouldn't want a relationship like that, but, you know, that's not for me to say. That for people who are in those relationships, you know, that if it works for them, then that's their business.
Mm-hmm.
So it really comes down to a personal decision that a person has to make. But I want to throw out that a lot of women, at least that, you know, I've seemed to meet over the years that are in situations like this, you know, they feel that they want to keep the marriage together for the sake of the kids. They don't want the kids, you know, to come from a broken home. And the analogy, which I may have said here on the show, or, you know, in different times, is that make believe you have a bowl and the bowl breaks and it's in, you know, 100 pieces, and you whisk them all together and put them in a box. So
mm-hmm.
you still have the contents of the bowl in the box, but even though it's together in the same box, it's shattered. It's not a healthy object anymore. So if a person is going to, you know, delude themselves to stay together for the sake of the kids, are you really doing, are the kids really benefiting from it? you know, in most cases, the answer is no, they're not, because you're modeling for them a relationship that is not based on honesty and truth and a healthy love.
And children sense that, right?
Definitely. Definitely. No matter how much of a facade you put on, it doesn't matter. You know, kids will sense what is happening. And then years later, when you as the mom, you know, want to give your daughter or son advice about relationships, especially if they're in one that, let's say, is one-sided or abusive, what are you going to say to them when they look at you and say, what are you talking about? You know, you put up with this for decades. Like, you were my role model. So to be a role model is not always something that, you know, is an easy decision. And I think most people, when they get married, aren't expecting to get divorced or betrayed. But when it happens, tough decisions have to get made. And staying together for the sake of the kids usually is a disaster. That does not mean when the kids find out there's going to be a divorce, there's not going to be problems.
Mm-hmm.
There will be, and you know, there's a very good chance there could be. But those problems will be more manageable and more healthy for the kids down the road as opposed to avoiding it, but role modeling for years a loveless, unhappy relationship.
I always said that it's better to be a single parent because, as you know, I was. But I was able to be a better mother to my children as a single mother than I was married to their father. Because
without
when I was
question.
Married to their father, you know, I was always every day dodging the bullets, walking on eggshells, wondering when the next shoe's going to drop on my face, and, you know, living in a volatile situation. And children sense this. I remember my daughter Jennifer, as you knew her when she was so little, you know, she's only 2 and a half, and I would see when her father would start screaming and shouting, she would be shaking. You know, people think this doesn't affect the children. It does affect the children. And that's why parents who stay together, I think it's really disastrous. I know my parents stayed together for a long time, fighting constantly. And finally, you know, the marriage ended. And even though it was hard on my mother, she wasn't under that constant pressure of fighting day and night. You know, so at least she was able to think more clearly. Where when you're married to somebody and you're constantly fighting and every day is a battle, it has to wear, you know, wear on you. And when it wears on you, it's going to wear on your children. You know, Ira, let me ask you this. Some women say to me, you know, I never act like that in front of my children. They don't know that I'm unhappy. Children know, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, in most cases, it comes through to them. And, you know, we all kind of are, to some degree, we kind of create the world that we wish it was. But kids figure things out. You know, if you have two spouses who never touch each other, meaning they never hold hands, they never walk up to each other and give each other, you know, a kiss. You never see them looking at each other with love. No matter how much you try to fake that things are okay, kids see that.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not seeing that, then the worst problem is going to be they're going to normalize what they're living and then have their relationships in the future. You know, they're not going to have the tools to have a healthy relationship because they didn't experience a healthy relationship to begin with. And there's nothing worse, I think, than walking into a house that is filled with anger, that is not a place you want to be. It's incredibly important for people to remember that the house is like the private refuge for a family. And then for a husband and wife, the bedroom is the ultimate, like, sanctuary for their privacy. And if anybody thinks that, you know, if they are in a cold bedroom, that does not spill over into everyday life, they're deluding themselves. And if they think the kids don't pick that up eventually, they're really mistaken.
So, in your opinion also, as you were just mentioning the bedroom, One thing that really bugs me more than anything else is this. When men are having affairs with other men and you're married to them, and you go to work and they're sneaking their boyfriends into your bed to have sex with them, that really irks me more so than anything else. Because I feel it's a violation of your home, of your bedroom, of your life together. And it's like smacking you in the face because they have to go to your bedroom on your bed to have sex. Does that make sense to you?
I think you're being too kind in what you're saying. If someone's having an affair, whether it's with the opposite gender or not, in this case, doesn't even matter. To have the lack of decency to bring that person home into your bedroom,
yeah,
I don't even have words to describe the disgust for a person who would do something like that. It's past disgusting. You now have violated the sanctity of the home with bringing, like, what are you thinking? It is an absolute disgust. And something like that, if the person in this case ever said, I'm sorry, I would say that's bullshit. You're only sorry you got caught. Like, how could you bring someone in the home where your children are, where your spouse is, especially in the bed? And this goes for gay or straight relationships. The person is an absolute disgusting thing. I could not counsel someone. I'll put it to you this way. Your listeners may know that I'm a therapist. A decent therapist, and I hope I'm decent, needs to know, you know, boundaries and what they can or can't handle. And if I had a client that told me that they were bringing people home or did bring people into their house, I would have to refer them to someone else. I would not be able to deal with that person in a way that I would need to.
And I think that's good.
I think I answered your question about when you say it irks, it's much deeper than that. If being cheated on is already a betrayal, bringing someone into the home, I got to think of vocab for this, Bonnie. I wasn't expecting this one. It's even deeper than it's a deeper type of betrayal.
Right.
Without question, but I'm stressing
all the time.
With any type of relationship, it could be whether you're two lesbians, two gay men, or a heterosexual couple, it doesn't matter. There are just certain rules in life that you do not violate, and that's one of them.
Well, I totally agree with you. So now, let's talk a little bit about sexuality, because that's what you're an expert in. So I always call the penis a dividing line, and I say that once you cross it in any way or manner, once you touch it, once you fondle it, once you do anything else with it or more with it, that is called, to me, gay sex. But not everybody agrees with me. They say I'm not woke enough. How do you feel about it?
I lean towards your side, but I would say there can be people, for whatever reasons, take a guy who is not typically, let's say, masculine, and people think that he's gay even when he's not. But so many people think he's gay that he then decides, he figures there must be something wrong with me if everybody thinks I'm gay. So there are some situations like this where if a guy did have a gay relationship or encounter and then realizes, you know, this really is not for me, this is not what I'm and the fantasies are a big thing. If this doesn't turn me on, then I would say that it just could have been an experiment and, you know, you're fully heterosexual. But the notion that a guy can be bisexual, I know in the gay community, they want nothing to do with men who present themselves as bi. They'll say it's bullshit. There is no way you can be bi. We don't want to deal with you politically. We don't want to deal with you at all, that you're really gay, but you're too chicken or ashamed to come out and admit it and be proud of who you are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the concept, can a man be truly gay, is very, very debatable. But I do agree with you that if a man is fantasizing on a penis and that's what he's looking forward to, he's going to be gay.
Well, I think even if he's with a wife, if he's thinking about the penis, that's an issue to me. And like I said,
well, yeah, orientation is not the same thing as behavior, and that's what I think confuses people. You know, like the question, you know, some people might say is, well, how, if someone's gay, how could they, especially if a guy is gay, how's he going to have an erection? How's he going, you know, to have sex and penetration with a woman? Well, the easy answer is if the brain is the most sexual part of the body. It's not the penis. It's not the clitoris. It's the brain. You have to turn the brain on in order for the body to have a physical reaction. So if the man is having behaviorally heterosexual sex, but fantasy-wise he's just thinking about men, he'll be able to get excited and have sex, although it does get more difficult as time goes by. That's how he'll be able to, you know, mislead his wife. And I'm willing to bet as the months turn into years, sex between them gets to be less and less. And many times when something, you know, is happening over a long period, no one even realizes that, boy, we're only having sex like once a month or once every couple of months. You have that with heterosexual couples.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the guy found somebody that was fairly inexperienced sexually,
mm-hmm.
or who doesn't like, you know, women a lot of times like to talk to each other or will talk to each other about their sex lives, if he finds somebody who he believes won't do that, then the woman, you know, keeps her lack, you know, her sex life or lack of a kind of like a secret and never tells anybody and just think that it's normal behavior.
So what would you say is normal behavior for adults sexually?
So that's, again, where I don't want to beat around the bush, but, you know, you have also people who are asexual, where in their case they can have sex, but it's not a big deal to them, and especially if a man is asexual, it's going to be harder for him to have an erection because he doesn't really have any fantasies. So if two people, I would say what's normal is to have compatibility in the relationship. So if two people are happy in a relationship where they have sex every day or every other day, then for them that normal works. If they're in a relationship where they have sex only once every month or every couple of months, if they both can be okay with that, then it works for them. So I don't know if I'm dodging the bullet here, Bonnie, but the word normal really refers, it's an individual case-by-case basis. And I know as like a sex therapist, then if somebody presents that they are having a problem in the relationship, whether it's their problem or their partner's problem, we you know, then it affects the relationship. There is no way that a person is going to, if they have a conflict in the bedroom, that it's not going to spill over into their everyday relationship with each other. Either you're going to feel like the person is rejecting you or what's wrong with me. And that's, you know, when you say please pass the butter and they shove it over to you, you know, you're like, well, what's got you going? Well, you know, we haven't had sex in God knows how long. That's what has me going.
Mm-hmm.
So normal is a very, you can't really define the word normal. So I'm going to say the compatibility between two people, and if they never have sex and they're happy with that, then, hey, for them that normal is fine.
Do you think that when people are younger that it's normal to have sex between them? I mean, most
yeah,
people
I mean, when
young.
People say it's a stereotype that men specifically, that every guy, you know, wants to have sex, people need to understand testosterone. For example, gay men have sex more often than heterosexual men. That is one reason why in a gay culture, going to the gym where a lot of times anonymous sex will happen, looking good, meaning not overweight and certainly dressing well, is a big part of that culture because of the emphasis that is placed on looking good. And just like in heterosexual relationships, you have like the sugar, you know, the trophy wife or the trophy husband. It's the same thing in a gay relationship. You know, you think a guy who's 25, 30 is going out with a guy 20 years older than him because, you know, there's such an attraction. Many times it's because the older guy just has the money and, you know, the younger guy is the good-looking trophy one and the older one is the trophy one financially. It's amazing, like, how many similarities you could have in a gay relationship, you know, along with a heterosexual one. But most guys, when they especially are younger, do want to have sex, you know, 3-4 times a week, if we're talking, like, averages. As the male body changes, when a guy isn't, you know, starting to be in his 40s and certainly even in his 50s, his body is not going to operate the same way it did when he was in his 20s. And then one of the reasons why...
Let me ask you this. Yeah. Let's say theoretically somebody identifies as asexual, meaning they really don't care about sex, or they don't want to have sex. But let's say you're the wife and you want to have sex. Even if it's not one of their things they love to do, are they able to do it or at least go through the pretense of doing it?
Well, you got to remember that when a man and a woman are having sex, it doesn't always have to be intercourse, and that is like a misconception even in, you know, heterosexual relationships. Someone who's asexual is not going to avoid sex. They're not going to initiate sex, but if they realize that their person, you know, that they're with, you know, wants to have sex, they will. Mm-hmm. Now, if the man is the one who's asexual, it's going to be difficult for him to make penetration because of a lack of an erection. But as long as his partner understands that, there's no reason why he still can't engage in sex with his partner, with his wife. But they probably will need to use maybe some type of a device for her, you know, to have an orgasm, unless, you know, he's able to achieve that with her. A person, though, that has a fear of sex, that is very different than being asexual.
Mm-hmm.
A total different issue. And a lot of that may have to, you know, comes from early childhood on what were the messages they received about sexuality. You know, men have body image issues just like women do. So if a guy feels like he's inferior or he's not able to be a good lover, then he's going to avoid sex as much as he can.
But one thing I want to clarify is that when your husband comes to you after you've been married a number of years and has no interest in having sex with you, and he says now he's asexual, but he's still looking at gay porn, how would you view that?
I mean, that is a total contradiction there. You can't be asexual and be looking at any type of porn, whether it's gay or straight.
Mm-hmm.
Unless he's going to use the excuse that he's doing it, you know, for therapy to try to see what turns him on. I mean, for some sex therapists, that would be something that they would recommend, is to try to find something, you know, that does excite you and then use that as your fantasy. But but if a guy is secretly looking at especially gay porn, no, the argument that he's asexual is out the window. He's not asexual.
Right. So you can't be misled into thinking that, because a lot of women are.
Well, if that is given to them, ladies, that's a... it's 100% nonsense excuse. If he was trying to deal with his asexuality, why isn't he looking at straight porn? So that's just another line that is being given to you. And, you know, if women watch their men, I mean, one of the giveaways is just see how they interact with other men. Just like with any two people, you can sense an attraction. So if you're married to a man who's saying he's asexual, but when you're out publicly, you kind of notice him looking at other guys or him and another guy making eye contact, that isn't, you know, you can tell there's some sexual tension there. You're seeing what's happening, but you're not, you know, willing to admit it, though, unfortunately.
Some
but asexuality has nothing to do with looking at gay porn. It's a line of nonsense.
There are some men who form relationships with other men, and a woman senses there's something wrong about that relationship. You know, they're spending a little too much time, they're talking a little too much, taking away from the family time or from time with the wife. And I always say that if it doesn't feel right, you have to be suspicious and, you know, check further into it. Because you can sense when your spouse is not really doing what they should be doing. I feel that most of the time people know this. Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, you know, out of all the topics in the world that people keep closest to them and are most embarrassed about, it's sex.
Mm-hmm.
So people will lie and swear on a stack of Bibles one thing in order, you know, to keep their image going, but be lying 100%. So always trust your gut. If you think that there's something going on, and this applies to a gay, straight, lesbian relationship, if you think that there's something going on, listen to your gut. Unless you're a very insecure person and you never have trusted anybody, then in that case, you know, you need to work on your insecurity. But if you're not that type of a person, trust your gut. You, no matter how many times you ask the person if there is someone involved and they tell you no, sometimes one and one doesn't make two.
I think
you know, like a man, you know, a man who's working out, who's shaving his body, for example. That's a sign of, like, you know, that's very big in gay culture.
Mm-hmm.
Is having a shaved body. So if the man is like shaving, for example, and you're saying to him, look, you know, I heard this guy Ira Gellman on a show, and he said that, you know, that's a sign of gay, and, you know, being gay, and are you gay? And the guy is like, ah, that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Well, you know, that's all part of the lie, you know, on the cover. Listen to your gut feeling.
And it wouldn't just be shaving. It would be all of a sudden detachment, the lack of intimacy, the lack of involvement, their anxiety to go out. They'll tell you they're going to the store, they're going shopping. They're going away for a weekend with their friends. You know, there's so many different excuses that they can use and that they do use. And I think that women have just such a hard time understanding that for gay men, often it's just the thrill of the homosexual act. There's no, it doesn't have to be any kind of emotional involvement. And as I tell women, it could take 30 seconds in a Macy's closet. Like some guys have told me, that's where they do it. And there's no emotional attachment at all. They can go to dinner with you, and you're at the dinner table ordering food, and they say, excuse me, I'll be back in a minute. And they're in the bathroom hooking up with somebody that they had met on one of these apps like Grindr, you know, telling them what restaurant they're going to be in, what bathroom, what stall they're going to be in. And I've had men who have talked to me and told me that they've done this. I mean, it's not something that's uncommon. It's something that's very common. But I was very naive in my early years of gay. And when one woman, I'll never forget, I laugh now, she told me her husband's going to the bookstore. I said, well, why do you have to think the worst? You know, maybe he wants to read a book. She says, men don't go to these kind of bookstores to read books, meaning the adult bookstores. And I never knew anything about glory holes and booths that they go into and put their penis through, and they never even see the person on the other end. You know, I had to learn all of that as I was going through, but these were things that were so inconceivable to me. And I think this is the problem, that women are judging by their own standards of heterosexuality, having no idea what the other world is about. Do you think that's a possibility?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that what you said is spot on. You know, how is somebody supposed to know about an alternative lifestyle if they, you know, they know, like, practically nothing about it?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, truck stops, you know, have been are notorious. You know, in any type of underground sexual activity, people that are involved are going to know exactly where to look, whether it's in a city or, is, you know, I said a truck stop. You're now with apps that are out there. It's very easy for people that have, especially an alternative lifestyle, to be able to find somebody. And for men, you know, having anonymous sex that, when you said it doesn't involve any emotions, yeah, of course not. It's a different lifestyle that is beyond most people's ability to understand or even know exists. Because how are you supposed to know it exists if that's not on your radar screen?
Right. And a lot of people don't even believe it does exist, because when you tell women that, and I tell them all the time, that if your husband's now telling you he's seeing somebody, that is not the first person he's seeing. I mean, based on working with over 150,000 women in 40 years, trust me when I tell you he's been out there before. And they swear up and down the wall, I'm so happy he's being honest with me. I said, if he's being honest with you and telling you that he's been involved with one man, that means really 100 men. He forgot to add the zeros on. And eventually, even though they get angry at me when I tell them that, in time, after he really comes clean and they find out, then they tell me, you were right. There were so many men before me. I mean,
yeah.
Think a bedroom thing is despicable. How about men who on their honeymoon are out there having sex with men on their honeymoon? We have a lot of women in that situation.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's, you know, yeah, it's... You know, once, unfortunately, you say I do, it changes things. And, you know, the honeymoon is supposed to be, for most people, you know, filled with sex. It's one of the most sexual times of anybody's life. And, if somebody married in order to have a cover and they're out, you know, to get bagels and coffee and they'll come back like in an hour with it, yeah, there's a good chance they could have met somebody in a bathroom, you know, and had a gay sexual encounter. And, you know, we need just to remind people who are listening to this presentation, this is not an anti-gay, homophobic conversation we're having. We're just having an anti, like, misrepresenting yourself and ruin someone else's life conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had somebody once that knew I, you know, was on these podcasts bring that up to me, like, well, isn't it anti-gay? And I go, here's the analogy. Let's say you're gay and you're married somebody who you think is gay, and as it turns out, for whatever reason, the person was straight. And then you find out one day that he's been having all these affairs with women, and not only that, but he never was gay. Would you not be, like, devastated from that? And, you know, it's a different, you know, way of presenting something, but, you know, the person would say, sure, I'd be devastated. So this is not a homophobic situation here. This is about somebody who is just misrepresenting themselves. And I just want to make that, you know, put that out there for, you know, anybody who's listening to this.
Now, our women are very pro-gay, and I think that's another reason why they're targeted by these guys. They check it out first, and if you're pro-gay, well, then if things, you know, fall down, you'll be understanding of why. And a lot of our women have gay children. I mean, when you have a gay parent, you have to expect there's a possibility of a gay child. And it's really important not to show any kind of homophobia that you may be feeling for your gay husband and reflecting it on gay in general. Because for their sake, you know, it's going to be unhealthy. And they're not going to want to come out like their fathers didn't for all those years. They're going to be afraid that they're going to not have your love or whatever the case is. So I don't mean to cut this short, Ira. We're running out of time. We only have another few seconds. This hour really went fast, or 45 minutes, and I really appreciate you coming on the show. And I'm hoping you'll come back with us after the holidays to continue this conversation. And I want to tell all of our women out there, stay strong. You're winners. You're not losers. You're victors. You're not victims. You've been victimized, but you're not a victim. And you have to fight back, stand up, and be proud of who you are. Any final words, Ira?
Yeah, I mean, this could be a good lead-in for the next conversation, because, you know, we've used the term when we talk amongst, you know, the two of us about codependency.
Mm-hmm.
And that raises the question about somebody becoming codependent and staying in a relationship that is a slap in their face and, you know, detrimental to them. So the codependency, that has to be addressed by the person who's allowing the situation to continue.
And that's the topic we'll start off with when we get back right after the holidays. So, Ira,
all right,
thank you so much. You know I love you. And to all,
all right,
of our
love
women,
you too.
Stay strong. And I'll talk to you all soon. Good night.
All right. You got it. Good night, everybody.